This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Every weekday, we talk with public officials, business and education leaders, nonprofit organizations, and more about the issues of the day as we work hard to help you stay connected with local news and information. Now, here's Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Last Friday, the Oregon State Legislature wrapped up their short session for 2026, and we're going to talk about that again with State Representative Alec Scarlatos this time. Joining us, Alec, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, a number of things, some wins, some losses. Overall, what was that? What did the whole short session feel like to you?
Felt like a whirlwind. I mean, it was my first short session. Last year's long session was just a totally different pace. We had so much more time to get things done. And this time in the short session, we only have 5.5 weeks, so everything felt incredibly rushed. Democrats were trying to pass all these terrible bills, and it just seemed like as quickly as we could organize to try to fight their bad bills, they were organizing more bad bills. And all in all, we actually got a lot of good things done, though. So it wasn't the worst thing in the world. It just went by incredibly fast.
So if you were to look on the winning side for the GOP, what would you point out to in particular?
The biggest things for us, I mean, probably killing the gun bill, at least for me personally. That's, you know, one of my pet projects is trying to preserve the Second Amendment in Oregon. And they wanted to have like a permit to purchase, which of course is unconstitutional, charge fees for the ability to have that permit. So they're not only requiring a permit for a constitutional right, but then charging you to exercise it, which is also ridiculous. You wouldn't apply that to freedom of speech or voting. And yet they wanted to do that for the Second Amendment. We were able to kill that, luckily. Specifically, the Senate did, actually, which was great. And then on top of that, we passed some legislation on recreational liability, so you don't get sued for, you know, if you run a snowboarding business, for instance. That was a big deal for us. I think we were the only state that didn't have something like that. We saved the Bay Area Hospital, actually, as well, got them some money to continue going. We got SOU, Southern Oregon University, funded. And probably the biggest win was bringing in funding for our county fairgrounds. Every county fairground in the state gets about $250,000 a year now. That was thanks to some of the stuff that we negotiated as Republicans. So all in all, pretty great. I'm really happy, and we're really organized and united as a caucus, and got to give a lot of credit to our leader, Lucetta Elmer, for that.
What about this gun bill in particular? How did things kind of progress on the battle on that legislation?
Well, it started in the House, so we had to fight it kind of tooth and nail. I testified against it at every point. You know, there was a lot of Democrats even that agreed with me that it was blatantly unconstitutional. Unfortunately, they still voted for it because, to be totally honest, they kind of have to. Their votes are kind of accounted for already, unfortunately. And if they don't vote how they're supposed to vote, they'll get primaried by the unions or their speaker. So even though we fought it as much as we could in the House, it still passed the House. But luckily, the Senate was over to kill it on. They were able to kill it on their side, which was fantastic. So overall, I mean, we've had so many bad gun bills all coming from basically the same legislator. And, you know, a lot of them have passed. We had Measure 114, of course, a couple of years ago that barely passed as well. And they're just trying to add to that pile of terrible gun bills. So overall, it has been trending in the wrong direction, but we've been able to do a lot this short session, luckily.
Now, talk a bit more about the county fairgrounds, getting the money. What? How did that process evolve?
Oh, that was, I mean, to be honest with you, that was a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes stuff. It was a big negotiation between us and the Democrats as to what we would kind of not put up a huge fight on, and in exchange they said, okay, we'll fund some fairgrounds. And then it was, you know, negotiation as far as how much. What they did was they removed the cap. I think it was a cap that was like around $100,000 a year through lottery funds. and we basically remove the cap, so they get, I think it's like a raw 1% of lottery funds distributed across the fairgrounds, which comes out to about $250,000 a year. And so it's going to be an additional $150,000 a year that the fairgrounds are going to get. And the nice thing about it is we are not telling the fairgrounds what they have to do with that money, which we like to do as a state. We're allowing the fairgrounds the leeway to actually do whatever they want with that money, whether it's, you know, repaving a parking lot, paying for staff, putting on more events, building new buildings. It's totally up to them. So that's great for us because, you know, rural fairgrounds get ignored all too frequently.
And, of course, we've seen the Douglas County Fairgrounds over the years kind of shift in operations and now essentially not be a budget item, but have to create their own revenue to sustain what they're doing. So any additional revenue like that's probably going to be very welcome.
Oh, absolutely. And especially in places like Eastern Oregon, where even their counties are worse off than we are. I mean, that's money that goes an absolute long way. And I think almost every representative except for one has at least one county fairgrounds in their district, at least on the Republican side. So for us, it was a huge win because, you know, in general, we're always trying to make sure that rural Oregonians are looked out for because Salem likes to ignore them all too much. So for us, that was the biggest win we've had in a while as far as bringing money back for the district. But, you know, we also did capital construction projects that did well. Again, Boomer Wright got his Bay Area hospital saved. We've had just a lot of good things came out of the short session overall. And I think even Ed Deal's ballot referendum, even though we passed the bill to move the election date to May, I think he's going to do really well in court and hopefully stop that as well. But we'll see. I don't want to speak too soon on that.
So you mentioned the hospital over there in the Coos Bay area, and that made me think of health care. That topic doesn't necessarily always seem like it's a partisan one. Where did the legislature help in the area of rural health care?
Well, of course, Boomer's Hospital. And the nice thing about that is it was nonpartisan because if it went under, it would also be the Democrats' problem as well, because even, you know, a lot of the hospitals along the I-5 corridor are actually losing money this year, mostly due to a lot of the legislation that we passed in the long session and, you know, maybe even the year before that as well. And so about 2/3 of what's hurting our hospitals is state legislation, and about 1/3 is due to HR1 and cutting back Medicaid reimbursements. So we still need to find some long-term solution to that. Because again, even our I-5 corridor hospitals are hurting, but that hospital in particular has had a tough go. They had a loan, I think, through the Bank of Montreal. So we basically gave them enough money to where they weren't being penalized and having to pay extra money to the Bank of Montreal, which will hopefully get them back on their feet and to where they won't need any more help from the state. But to be honest, we have much bigger fish to fry when it comes to healthcare statewide. We need to repeal some of the nurse staffing laws that we passed in the long session. There's just all sorts of things that we do as a state and even the federal government to get in the way of healthcare and people doing the right thing. I gave a speech on the House floor just comparing, you know, how our most regulated markets are always the most expensive with the least amount of options. And that's not a coincidence. It's because government involvement makes things more expensive and harder to get.
Well, I know the kicker seems to come up in just about every legislative session, and this one was no exception.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up. Yes, we also were able to kill them stealing the kicker, so we'll get to keep the kicker this year, which is great. But man, Democrats always come up with new reasons or ways to try to tax people and take their money. I know we talked about last time I was on the federal disconnect as well from the Big Beautiful Bill tax cuts, and they don't want you to be able to write off the interest on your car loan. That's something that's going to every other state in the country is going to comply with federally, and we're disconnecting from that for some reason, and that only hurts working class people. You know, wealthy people that I know either use their car as a business write-off or they pay for it cash. So have people with car loans aren't the wealthiest Americans. So I don't know why they would still decide to tax that. And then, of course, there's the bonus depreciation about being able to claim your write-offs in 1 year. We're disconnecting from that. So Oregonians aren't allowed to write off business purchases in 1 year. They have to do it over the course of 5 years, which, again, just keeps money tied up and not going back into the real economy, which makes no sense because it's not changing the amount of money the state of Oregon's taking in. It's just not allowing people to get their refund in one lump sum. So it just doesn't make any sense to me at all from a policy standpoint, even if you want to keep more of the taxpayers' money.
Here we are in the tax season, just over a month till April 15th. One of the things as well that came up was the issue of the estate tax. That's got a lot of talk. What took place there?
Well, we need to fix the estate tax. Right now, anyone with an estate over $1 million is taxed at, I think, around 17%, anything beyond $1 million. And so we need to change that because, unfortunately, due to inflation and the cost of housing going up, you know, almost the upper middle class has an estate over $1 million. And before that was, you know, considered very wealthy. And so now they were trying to bump it up to, I think, $2.5 million. But the second you get over $2.5 million and $1, the tax would revert back to the $1 million basis. So you'd still get taxed on anything over $1 million, but only if you have over a $2.5 million estate. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but basically it just didn't solve the problem we were trying to solve. And I mean, you pay taxes your whole life. You shouldn't have to pay taxes again when you die and try to give what you've spent your whole life earning and being taxed on to your children. I'd love to see it be abolished completely, but I think the real goal is to try to get the exemption up to $5 million. So only estates over $5 million are taxed. And, you know, we have some additional carve-outs for, like, rural properties and farms, which is great, but we still need to bump that bottom end up a little bit more, unfortunately.
Well, and with, as you mentioned, with inflation, I mean, if somebody's got a $400,000 house, maybe a $500,000 house, and they've got investments and a few other things like that, you could be pretty firmly in the middle class and still get past that $1 million mark.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, even if you have, you know, a $600,000 house, which is almost common these days. I mean, my first house that I bought is now worth like over $400,000, which is insane. And, you know, if you're a retiree and you have like a nice house in maybe an HOA or something like that, and then you have a 401k on top of that, and then you have a car or two, you're well over that $1 million mark already. And again, it's not even about wanting to tax wealthy people with huge estates. It's just about these people have been paying taxes their whole lives. And then when they save and do all the right things and pay taxes over the course of a whole career, and then they want to give what they've earned to their family, they're having to pay taxes on top of that. I mean, a death tax is just philosophically wrong to me. I mean, again, I'd like to see it abolished completely, but we just need to take some steps in the right direction at least.
State Representative Alex Garlatos with us on Inside Douglas County. So much happened in such a short amount of time during that short session. And as you mentioned earlier, the legislation to move the vote on the transportation or gas tax did move to May. It seems awfully tough, or maybe even a little unlikely, that a court challenge is going to make it through just given the time frame we're in. If the vote takes place in May, after all, what do you think the result will be?
Well, frankly, that's the exact argument that we're making, is that there's not enough time for it to play out in court. There's not enough time for people to submit statements to the voter ballot, or the pamphlet, so that they can actually have their voices heard and still make all the Secretary of State's and federal deadlines to even make it on the ballot with the change that we passed. So that's honestly part of the entire court case. And so we'll see how that plays out. I think Ed Deal, I think they were granted a stay today in federal court. So I'm not sure what that actually means. Maybe you should have Ed Deal on next to talk about it. But I know that's a good thing for us in the meantime. So I'm sure they're going to speed run this whole thing and try to get an answer one way or the other within like a week or so. So we'll see what shakes out. But I wouldn't say I'm optimistic. You know, Democrats run the courts in Oregon. But I think we have a pretty strong case, especially just due to the fact that it was obviously partisan for the reason that they wanted to move the date in the first place. None of the same Democrats that voted for this transportation tax increase want to have the referendum be on the same election as they are in the general election against a Republican who is obviously going to run against the gas tax increase. So it's just blatantly partisan, and I hope the courts can see that.
So for half of the members of the Senate, for all of you in the House, you've got elections coming up. But as people look ahead and presume that they're still going to be around in the next session, are there things you already are thinking about or ideas you're working on for the main session next year?
Yeah, we have some ideas. Obviously, a lot of the legislation that I've tried running, even on like things like Ibogaine, which is a treatment for PTSD and brain trauma, especially in veterans. I tried doing that again in the short session, and it didn't go, unfortunately. I'm going to try it again next long session. And at the end of the day, I'm a representative for, you know, areas like Canyonville, Central Point, Gold Hill, Rogue River, Glendale. If you live in that area and you have an idea for a piece of legislation, or if you own a business and you think, hey, if we could just change this one little thing, it would make my life a whole lot easier, reach out to me, reach out to Virgil Osborne, reach out to Court Voice or your senators, David Brock Smith or Noah Robinson. In the long session, we can run as many bills as we want, and we need ideas, and we need to be in touch with people that are actually having problems with state laws that we can help change. That's our job, so don't be shy to reach out with ideas. You can find all of our email addresses on the Oregon State website.
And as you look at this, what do you feel like being in the legislature? How do you feel you're making an impact?
Well, I wouldn't even say that just me personally. I just think as a team and as a caucus, we've been very united, and when we're in the super minority, right? So one legislator can't even really make a huge difference. But when we all band together as a team, we can kill some of the worst of the Democrat priorities. Because, the Democrats don't want things to be hyper-partisan. They don't want things to be contentious, because then it'll hurt them in the election. And so if we can all band together, we can help kill some of this stuff. So I really got to give credit to our entire caucus. I'm the deputy leader. Virgil is the whip. Lucetta Elmer is the leader. And just everyone in our caucus has been on the same page for the entire short session. And so we've done a really good job, and I just hope that continues going forward. I'm really optimistic for the future, and I'm really interested to see how this next election is going to go in November. Hopefully we can pick up some seats. We got to flip two to get out of the super minority. And if we can do that, we can at least stop some of the more egregious tax bills that come through. So just get involved in your local party, whichever side you're on, and try to make an impact, because we need the help here in Oregon.
For Republicans, with the midterms coming up nationally, a lot of times the party out of power usually picks up some ground, and sometimes that impacts state races, local races as well. Does that concern you at a time that you're hoping to see some GOP gains?
Yeah, to be honest, it does concern me. It's something that we're going to have to battle against. Typically, because Republicans are the party out of power in the state of Oregon, we actually outperform voter registration by at least a few percent. And that's just due to, people being tired of the direction Oregon's going in, so they'll vote for the opposite party. So we have that going for us. But yeah, normally the party out of power does very well, especially federally. And frankly, the one thing that we were hoping was having the referendum vote be in November would drive a lot of turnout, at least maybe not even for Republicans, but just for people that are upset with the Democrats that are still voting to make their lives harder and more expensive. And so we were hoping that would at least kind of balance that out. There's a lot of other referendums. I think there's going to be a referendum on the estate tax. I think there might even be a referendum on the federal disconnect as well. So, and of course, IP-28, if that gets on the ballot, that bans hunting and even farming and ranching, if that makes it on the ballot, that's going to drive a lot of turnout for people that obviously don't want that to pass, a lot of rural people that tend to vote Republican. So even though we might have some headwinds federally, I think in the state of Oregon, people are just sick of the Democrats going too far. And I know we've said that before, but man, I can't imagine anything worse coming down the pike than what they're thinking of now.
Now, as you look ahead, do you kind of have a kickoff set for your own campaign?
Oh, my goodness. Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, we have a kickoff event. I think it's Saturday in Central Point. Not Central Point. I think Medford proper, actually. But, yeah, I've got a kickoff event. I was just at Dwayne Yunker's kickoff event in Grants Pass last night. And luckily, I am unopposed in my election, but we still appreciate all the help that we can get. And, again, whatever I do, I'll just spend my time helping other Republicans get elected, especially as deputy leader. That's part of the responsibility. But yeah, we have a kickoff event in Medford. If you'd like to go check out my Facebook page, I think we'll post the ad there. And yeah, I appreciate the appreciate you reminding me of that, Kyle.
You know, a lot of people may not realize that part of your district goes that far south.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it goes all the way down to Central Point. I have the Jackson County Fairgrounds in my district. I've got Gold Hill, Rogue River, Glendale, Wolf Creek, Riddle, all the way up to the southern edge of Winston, which is where I live, up to the south side of Highway 42, but not Winston proper. So it's a little weird district, but it's kind of the area. It's all of the area in between Grants Pass, Roseburg, and Medford, but not any of the cities, really.
All right. State Representative Alex Scarlatos out of time now. Thanks for being on today.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
12:57, we'll be talking to one of the candidates for governor tomorrow, Chris Dudley, on Inside Douglas County at 12:30.
This has been Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Listen every weekday afternoon at 1230 to stay connected with what's happening in your community. Today's interview will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it with others and let them know where they can hear it. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.